hypothyroidism isn't only heavy, you know, being overweight, it can also be being underweight, feeling fatigued, brain fog, weight gain, no energy, joint pain. The list is unending.
What is the cause of it?
Insufficient iodine. I think I was 18. My mother was diagnosed at 50 or 52 with hypothyroidism. And then I remembered that this horrible tarsal tunnel operation she'd had on her foot when I was 10, the most painful thing she'd ever experienced. And the further I went, I said, oh, that is also related to hypothyroidism. Now, the thyroid is formed 20 days into the fetal development. So before the brain, before the neural tube, comes the thyroid. So all of our tissues need thyroid hormone. Every single cell in the body needs thyroid hormone.
These are the 10 warning signs. I don't know, there's many more which we can talk about. The first warning sign that your thyroid might be in trouble is your body temperature.
Absolutely. And why is that important? Because...
Now, what I have here is some foods. Are they good for balancing hormones? The first one is a ribeye.
It has fat, mm-hmm. It has protein, it has no anti-nutrients.
So this is fruit. This is the interesting one because you say that fruit doesn't have any anti-nutrients.
Doesn't have anti-nutrients, but it does have...
Dr. Wright.
Hi, Rena.
Hi. Now, I traveled 10,000 miles to come see you today. And the reason for that is I wanted to speak to you about high-fat carnivore, mm-hmm. but I changed my mind. After speaking to you for over a month now about different topics, I realized the main source of all illness and disease is our thyroid. So today, Dr. Bright and I are going to talk about the 10 warning signs that your thyroid might be in trouble, and most importantly, how to fix it. But before we get into all of that good topic, I would like to ask you, how did your interest in thyroid all start?
I went back to naturopathy. I went back to school to study naturopathy. And one of the courses was naturopathic endocrinology. Mm-hmm. So that really piqued my interest. And I was able to, during the course, I just... all these lights went off in my head that, oh. And I realized that some of my family members had been suffering from thyroid dysfunction. And then I remembered at that time, as a teenager, I think I was 18, my mother was diagnosed at 50 or 52 with hypothyroidism. And then I remembered that this horrible tarsal tunnel operation she'd had on her foot when I was 10, the most painful thing she'd ever experienced. My mother was a single mother, so I was very close to her. And the further I went, I said, oh, that is also related to hypothyroidism. So she had not been diagnosed, and I know she hadn't breastfed me. She couldn't breastfeed me. She could not breastfeed me because she didn't lactate. So it was just all these things, the domino effect of realizations that piqued my interest in it.
And Dr. Bright sees so many different types of people. And I just spoke to her before we started the interview to say, what are the different types of diseases or illnesses that people are going to come to you where they might have thyroid issues? Could you just tell us a few that you see?
Well, okay. The disease is mostly malfunctioning, right? So people do come to me with a diagnosis of a disease. But most people come to me feeling fatigued, brain fog, weight gain, inexplicable weight gain, no energy, joint pain, infertility, constipation. The list is unending, and I have a questionnaire of unending questions of symptoms that are associated with low thyroid function.
Absolutely. And the interesting thing is that when somebody goes to their doctor and they just say, I'm feeling fatigued, I have brain fog, I'm not feeling that great, what does the doctor do?
Like no antidepressants.
Antidepressants?
Yes.
Maybe some...
amphetamines.
Yeah. So...
HRT.
Right. So it's not to say that they're not going to the root cause of what the issue is. And that's why the thyroid is so important. We're going to talk about what is the thyroid. We're going to talk about why the thyroid is so important. But getting back to Dr. Bright, your history, we spoke about your mother, mm-hmm. that she was hypothyroid. So we're going to talk about the differences between hyper and hypothyroid. So your mother was hypothyroid. How did that affect her life and your life growing up?
I don't know how it affected my life. I as I said, I wasn't breastfed for that reason. She was a very intrepid journalist, one of the first women journalists in her time. And she was a single mother, so she had to work some nights, which of course didn't help her thyroid function, just to put food on the table. I think that I would say her self-esteem would have been affected. I'm thinking back now. I remember her telling me that she dieted like crazy to get into her wedding dress. So, and I do remember my mother's weight fluctuating when I was a child. She ended up 40s, 50s emaciated until her death. Hypothyroidism isn't only heavy, you know, being overweight, it can also be being underweight. Because she had Hashimoto's, so her thyroid was overproducing and underproducing. I would basically say self-esteem, because she was involved with men who weren't wonderful to her, and she was very insecure about. She was this amazing professional journalist, but in her personal life, she was very insecure.
And it's interesting that you said because she was so insecure, that made you become, because we know that Dr. Bright, she's so strong and intelligent and so, I mean, I wouldn't say dominant, but you are. So when you meet Dr. Bright, she's a very great character and she's got so much enthusiasm and drive and ambition and just passion for life. But you were saying that because of your mom's insecurity, that made you really strong.
Yes, I remember. There was this, she was part of an amazing Institute of Current World Affairs. She was covering the student demonstrations in Europe. So she was one of the people who was given a grant to study this and write these articles. Amazing papers that I have today. And I remember us going to, when I was a teenager, I guess 17 maybe, going to a conference. And I literally had to, you know, tell her, no, mom, you're really smart. You're going to do fine. You're going to do great. Don't worry. Mm-hmm. Because she was afraid that these other people who were Institute members were so much better than her. I mean, these were amazing journalists. One of them had walked with, you know, Chairman Mao in the Long March in China. She felt really inadequate. Mm-hmm. And it always bothered me.
So that's what made you so strong, to actually push your mom to say that, you know what, mom, have the confidence, have the drive to actually achieve what you want to achieve. And I know many people out there that they're watching, you know, it could be a thyroid issue. It could just be something that you just feel held back in your life. So a lot of the times when your hormones, they're not regulated, and the thyroid, it's part of the endocrine system, which is your cascade of hormones. So when your hormones are not balanced, it affects your whole life. It's not just the weight gain, fatigue, brain fog. It's your whole life that it can affect, including, as we're talking about, confidence and self-esteem.
Right.
I know that you mentioned with your mom, she was doing the dieting. Mm-hmm. You were also doing some yo-yo dieting at 16.
Yes, at 15, actually.
Really?
I actually, I found a stupid book that was lose weight something on a 500 calorie a day diet. So I literally ate 500 calories for I don't know how many weeks. And I remember fainting in the shower, and my school went on a ski trip, and I couldn't go skiing because I was dizzy and could barely stand up. I was chewing sugarless gum constantly, packs and packs. Mm-hmm. And I lost weight, but I was really unhealthy.
500 calories. And I'm sure that people out there, they're probably thinking, I probably try a diet that is maybe not 500 calories, but probably 1,200 calories.
I would like to, the person who wrote that book, you know, I don't have it anymore. It also had all these, I had a book with, you know, run up. And I remember my father and stepmother live in Germany. They would send us Christmas cookies every year. And I remember eating a cookie and calculating how many calories to burn to eat that cookie and running up and down the stairs.
Absolutely. I did the same thing. I'm sure that many people have done the same thing, whether it be counting points, counting macros. The great thing about carnivore, and we're going to talk about high carnivore as a solution to your thyroid and your hormones, is that it's not about counting calories. It's not about counting anything, because what you want to give your body is nutrients, and what you want to give your body is fat. because fat is so important for your thyroid, so important for your hormones. So the dieting, the yo-yo dieting, especially in your teenage years, did that affect your hormones or anything with your health?
I don't know, but I want to mention one more thing. I remember one time I was having an argument with my mother, and she was married at that time to my stepfather, and she slapped me. We were arguing about it because he had done something terrible, and I was saying, I don't know what I was saying. And I said, don't slap me. I can break your arm because it's as thin as a twig. Because she was that emaciated. And when I went to see her several times in Texas, she had Alzheimer's, and I was very, very sad. And I just would always, you know, she was so frail, and that's important to me. And that's why I go paddleboarding and I build a lot of muscle, because I don't want to break when I fall down.
Absolutely. And that's as we age. I mean, you're in your early 60s and I'm 40. So especially as you age in your 30s, 40s and 50s and 60s and beyond, you really want to have strong joints, have the muscle, have your hormones balanced so that when you go through menopause, where's your book? You can grab your book. This is an amazing book. I wanted to have it here. Okay, so this is Dr. Bright's book. Good fat is good for women, menopause. Now, this is not just for women. Fat is also very important for men. So whether it be the thyroid, which we're going to get more into, or your hormones, anything that a person presents in terms of inflammation, it's coming to the root cause, which it could be thyroid, adrenals, but it's your hormones are not balanced. Doesn't mean that you need to count calories. You don't need to take a pill or a drug or go on a certain diet. You need to fix your hormones. So if you haven't checked out this book, please check out this book. It's absolutely incredible, especially in Italy, because we're in Italy now. It must be a bit mind-boggling for Italians to think, oh, I shouldn't eat my pasta.
Right.
I should eat
my focaccia, my pizza.
Pizza, pasta, tiramisu, all these different things. So how did you then become interested in the high-fat approach? That was kind of in your 50s.
Yes. I was already, I guess, ketogenic when I went into menopause. I turned 52. I remember having gone to China for a training session with my master. I was still doing Kung Fu. I had still had the school, which I closed not long after that because I just couldn't do it with work and training and teaching, working during the day and teaching Kung Fu at night. And I was overtraining. And I looked into menopause. I said, oh, I'm going to be menopausal because my period was less frequent. And let me look this up. And I was horrified about what I read on the internet about what was associated, the menopausal symptoms associated. I said, that's not me. I don't feel this way. I think I gained 2 pounds and then I, you know, lost it immediately after. And I didn't feel what is associated with...
Suzanne Summers.
With
so Suzanne, Dr. Bright,
which is what I found. I just found this on the internet.
Yes.
And so I had to look it up. And Suzanne Summers wrote a book. And the sexy years, in which she renamed the 7 dwarves of menopause, itchy, bitchy, sleepy, sweaty, bloated, forgetful, and all dried up. Which I didn't have any of those things. So I wanted to go do a deep dive into the history of menopause and how medicine addresses it to figure out why in the heck are those things associated with a menopausal woman.
But it's interesting you said that previously you were ketogenic. That means that you were doing a higher fat approach, lower carb.
Yes.
So that could be why you kind of sailed through menopause and
maybe. Maybe. I would think, yes, I think it would be better. Previous to that, we would eat bread. We would only have sweets on the weekend. Mm-hmm. She made everything from scratch. She loved cooking. So there was no processed food. Of course, there was, there were seed oils. There was fake stuff like Crisco and stuff like that, which I blame for my grandfather's Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. But no, it was pretty much what people come to me and they say, oh, I've been eating clean for a very long time. But if you don't have, it doesn't mean that you may also have other issues that are related to iodine deficiency or trauma or stress.
We're going to talk about the cause of a lot. So the cause of like not just thyroid issues, but a lot of different issues that people don't think about, because they think that if I am obese, if I have insulin resistance, if I have metabolic syndrome, if I have X, Y, Z, it's because I've just eaten too many calories. But there are so many other things involved with health problems. So we're going to unpack that. But before we get into that stuff, it is really important to understand what is a thyroid. When I first did my interview with Dr. Bright, which is don't eat one stick of butter a day and eat this instead, because Dr. Bright was recommending the one stick of butter a day and still does as a guide towards how people can start high-fat carnivore. But when I...
One can visualize...
Yes.
High-fat carnivore.
Visualize.
The macros.
Yes. If you want to... It doesn't mean that you should eat the one stick of butter a day. When I was doing that interview, and I really had to research, okay, high fat and why you recommend high fat and, you know, what is the endocrine system? What is the thyroid? What is the adrenals? Even then, I was still learning. But from speaking to you from the last month, I even learned a lot more. But for people out there that are just thinking, why do I have to care about my thyroid? Why? What is the thyroid, first of all?
Well, it's the first endocrine gland that forms in the human body. So we are vertebrates. We crawled out of the sea and we were living in this iodine-rich soup of water. And the thyroid formed so we could carry iodine with us. Otherwise, we would not have formed our brain eventually. So the thyroid means that we can have iodine in our system because it stores iodine. And iodine is what the thyroid makes hormones out of. Now, the thyroid is formed 20 days into the fetal development. So before the brain, before the neural tube, comes the thyroid. So basically, thyroid hormone builds all of the tissues in the fetus. So all of our tissues need thyroid hormone. Every single cell in the body needs thyroid hormone. And thyroid hormone is involved in mitochondrial genesis. It's involved in sparking all cellular energy. Mm-hmm. It's involved in, it actually carries through the process of turning protein, carbohydrates, and fat into energy. So without an adequate thyroid hormone, you're not energizing your cells.
What is
mitochondria? The genesis, so okay. It makes thyroid hormone regulates the production of a mitochondria.
Okay, which is the energy cell in your cell. So where you get energy...
Right, it's the battery of your cell.
Yes,
right.
So your ATP PC system,
yes.
Your mitochondria. So you need the thyroid for all that. And people don't, I guess, you know, Western medicine, they don't really think about the thyroid and how important or crucial it is in terms of how everything evolves and the energy production and that kind of thing. Where is the thyroid on the body?
It's right here. It's in front of the larynx and the trachea. Yeah,
so it's right here.
Yes.
Right here. Now, if somebody wants to go test their thyroid, I know that you mentioned TSH is not a very good...
Well, it's not a very good measure because thyroid hormone is actually converted by deiodinases. So they are enzymes that catalyze the conversion from T4, which is the inactive hormone, which the thyroid produces 80% of that. 80% of the production is T4. 16% is T3, which is active, which actually helps catalyze the conversion, and T1 and T2. And the thyroid also makes calcitonin, so it doesn't just make one hormone. But the TSH only measures... The tissue that talks to the thyroid to make it more, to uses TSH to talk to the thyroid are liver tissue, kidney tissue, skeletal tissue, not brain tissue. Many other tissues do not use TSH to tell the thyroid to make more hormone. So just looking at TSH means there are this host of all these other tissues that we're not measuring how much thyroid production is needed.
So what else should we test for? When you go see a doctor and you say, okay, I want to test my thyroid, what should they test for?
Free T3, free T4, and if there are inflammatory issues, antithyroid peroxidase, which is a thyroid antibody, and antithyroid globulin, which is also an antibody.
Okay, can you just say those things again, please? Free
T3. Free T3, free T4, antithyroid peroxidase, and antithyroid globulin.
Okay. So write those down. So if you want to go test your thyroid and make sure that it's in the adequate range, go get good. Okay. This is another thing.
The ranges are too wide.
Right.
The ranges are looking for Cancer and coma, the ranges are looking for the extremes. They are not looking for optimum function. They're looking for disease. They're looking for somebody so far gone. And even the people who are so far gone, I've had people come to me with a TSH of 12. So in their case, the TSH, the thyroid, you know, tissues were screaming at the thyroid, make more hormone. Mm-hmm. No physician said, hey, you're hypothyroid. We need to address this. Mm-hmm. But in many cases, the ranges are too wide and people don't get diagnosed.
So if we're talking about ranges, is it from zero to...
No, there's a range. There's a free T3. I mean, it's different. You guys have PMOL, you know, the U.S. has NG or PG. Okay. I'm just saying that people fall. A very low level of free T3 is a person can have be at the bottom of the range and no one will say anything. Mm-hmm. No one will say, hey, you don't have enough thyroid hormone, because what they actually need to feel better is much more than that.
Okay.
More than that.
What can they do instead? Do they have to see a naturopath? Do they have to see somebody that understands?
That's a very long story. I'm putting all of that in my thyroid book after I write the adolescent book. Okay.
So Dr. Bright is writing a new book, and that... Oh, after your adolescence book, you're writing that book.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
So that's the great thing about Dr. Bright, is that she's trying to give you guys all the answers. If you have questions about thyroid health, all these different things, hormones, you know, how to sail through menopause, how to everything in life, by just reading a book, not having to spend thousands or tens of thousands of dollars seeing different doctors and not getting the answer, reading the book, which is going to come out after she finishes the Fat for Adolescents book, which is very, very interesting. So I also want to talk about, we know what the thyroid is. There is two types of thyroid issues. There is hypothyroidism, mm-hmm. hyperthyroidism. Mm-hmm. Am I right?
No. So hyper is actually a variation of hypo. Hyperthyroidism is when the thyroid is inflamed, it overproduces. It's overproducing hormones because it's being attacked. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a very uncomfortable state. Your heart rate will go up. You may lose weight. You may have hypertension. But these are also things that you'll see with hypothyroidism. So it's very confusing. But the diagnosis would be if the TSH is very, very low, the free T3 and the free T4 are very, very high. But this is a transitory state. The thyroid will eventually just peter out and be unable to make hormones.
Okay.
So another issue would be, for instance, if there's an iodine deficiency, the thyroid will grow extra pieces. It will grow nodules. It will expand in order to trap iodine, which is what goiter is. But you can have nodules and a hyperproduction of the thyroid without having goiter.
Ah, because that was a warning sign for a hyperthyroid if you have a goiter. So even if you have like a nodule here, that might mean that you're hyperthyroid, is that right? But we'll get into the...
It's over, the thyroid is being attacked. It's either inflamed due to an insufficiency, or it is being attacked by antibodies. Obviously, you'd have to address inflammation in that case. But the thyroid, what do? They make you drink... or they inject your thyroid with radioactive iodine, and then they make it so it cannot produce any hormone at all, and then for the rest of your life you have to take thyroid hormone instead of addressing why is a thyroid overproducing.
Let's get to the causes of if somebody has a thyroid issue. So it could be hyper, they have a thyroid issue.
Mm-hmm.
What is the cause of it?
Insufficient iodine, because the thyroid needs iodine to make thyroid hormone. Each thyroid, you know, T3, T4, T2, T1 are all made out of molecules, congregation of iodine molecules attached to a amino acid tyrosine back. Okay, so without iodine, it cannot make hormones. Thyroglobin is a protein, so you need protein. And another thing would be stress, trauma. That will happen. I've had many patients who have experienced stress and trauma. Why? Stress and trauma are nutritionally expensive. The thyroid needs zinc. The thyroid needs iron. The thyroid needs magnesium. The thyroid needs all these nutrients. If you are experiencing stress and trauma, you're burning through all these nutrients. How do you get them back? What if you are not in a place where you can eat adequately? That's why the diet is so important.
That's why high-fat carnivore is so important.
Yes, you need to replenish these nutrients. as you're burning through, exercise is the same thing. If you're over-exercising, you're burning through nutrients. It's nutritionally expensive. Having 12 babies is nutritionally expensive. Having 6 babies is nutritionally expensive. These are things that have you need to replenish, or the thyroid would not be able to function properly.
So when we talk about stress, probably people are thinking, well, I have a stressful life. Mm-hmm. Either I have a stressful job, I have kids, I have a mortgage, I have X, Y, Z to make me stressed. How do you deal with that? Is it just eating high-fat carnivore and taking the iodine? Mm-hmm. Or do you have to deal with that stress? Even you mentioned childhood trauma. How do you deal with that? Do you have to see a therapist?
Okay, so that depends. Many people, I think things like... we cannot live with the absence of stress. Health is the how we address stress. It's not the absence of stress. So if our system is strong and we have an adequate diet, then we are better able to address stress. So horrific things that happen to a person in their childhood or malnourishment in their childhood, I would equate them the same. They will affect the brain and your system the same. Being raped or being malnourished biochemically is the same. It's nutritionally expensive. You may have recurring nightmares or things like that, and that would be you're going into a sympathetic stress state, which would need to possibly be addressed by therapies that would help you not react with a sympathetic fight or flight state and help you move into parasympathetic state. I see the body as being a very chemical, biochemical organism that you cannot separate the head, the brain, from the rest of the body. So the neurotransmitters that the adrenals and the brain are both producing at the same time, they're all working together to make you feel, to make you address stress adequately.
Absolutely. So it's the behavioral therapy that we also have to do along with the diet recommendations to actually change your whole, even the way that you associate things in your brain and how your body, I guess, the way that you experience life from a child to whatever age you are now. There's going to be a certain type of trauma or stress associated with it. So even if it's a way to deal with those associations or habits, mm-hmm. people still have to do that along with taking, for example, iodine, along with doing the high-fat carnivore, if that makes sense. Because if you mm-hmm. do high-fat carnivore, take some iodine, but you have a stress response to something, mm-hmm. your cortisol is going to shoot up.
Yes.
Even you say if you just go over exercise, if you're exercising for over 15 minutes, I remember from the last interview, mm-hmm. if you remember, if you exercise for over 15 minutes.
Cortisol is going up, yes.
So you really have to manage the cortisol. And even Dr. Bright, you do your paddle boarding mm-hmm. and you manage your cortisol based on the amount of activity.
Yes.
Because it's so important.
Yes. Because I have crashed previously, so from over exercising. So I have to kind of be careful. I won't race. I have been asked to race. I won't race because I know that my cortisol, I won't sleep the night before, and then racing is very competitive. I have been competitive in the past, and I know it's not good for me.
So when somebody is feeling stressed, so you just mentioned your heart rate will be increasing, that you are feeling stressed. Mm-hmm. How does somebody know if they have elevated cortisol without testing it?
It's difficult. It's yeah. difficult. The funny thing is that low cortisol feels just as bad as high cortisol. Okay. So over time, the body hates, and being hypothyroid will raise your cortisol just by itself mm-hmm. because you need, because cortisol hormone actually takes the place of thyroid hormone in the absence of adequate thyroid levels. So you can't even stop that. That's just biochemical. That's what happens. But over time, the body does not like high cortisol. Over time, the pituitary, the brain, will stop telling the adrenals to make cortisol because cortisol is associated with bones pulverizing. It's inflammatory. Mm-hmm. So then a person will have low cortisol. Maybe not all, there's a circadian rhythm. The body is producing thyroid hormone and cortisol hormone in a pulsatile fashion throughout the day. So as needed, boom, the body makes it. As needed, boom, the body makes it. Mm-hmm. So if you're addressing stress, your body's producing cortisol. If you, it may happen in the morning. We're supposed to have high levels in the morning. It may happen in the afternoon. It may happen at noon. It may happen in the night. If you have high cortisol at night, you won't be able to sleep. But if you have low cortisol at night, you won't be able to sleep. Too low, right? There's a range. Too low, you won't be able to sleep.
What's the cause of low cortisol? Because we hear cortisol, high cortisol associated with stress. Why would somebody have low cortisol?
I had low cortisol because I overtrained. I had high cortisol because I was sparring and fighting and training and doing too much kung fu. And then I flatlined. I had low cortisol. So that was because my brain didn't like the high cortisol, and it turned off the spigot to turn the AC, to send the ACTH to the adrenals to make cortisol. Now my daughter, my youngest, who had a car accident at 18, was kept alive because she went into shock. So her cortisol produced an enormous amount to keep her alive. And then afterwards, she was incredibly sensitive. Her immune system was weak. She was afraid of, you know, getting in a car, not because of the impact, just the fact of motion, all that elicited a sympathetic nervous system response. And I had to treat her for several years.
Wow. So,
because she had low cortisol, because her body had produced, we're supposed to have the ability to run away from danger. That is what cortisol is for. But if our body thinks we're running away from danger every day, we will eventually be unable to produce the amount of cortisol we need to address stress.
And that's why eating fat is so important, because it helps to replenish your cortisol if it is high.
But okay, it brings high down and it replenishes low. It basically, it's anti-inflammatory. It gives you the nutrition you need. Burning ketones is way better for a cortisol issue than burning glucose, because glucose is a stimulant. You need to avoid stimulants like crazy with cortisol issues.
Absolutely. And it's so interesting, I saw on your Instagram that there were some advertisements in the 50s and 60s or 70s.
Yes.
What were those advertisements about?
Oh, the sugar ones.
Yeah.
Yes. Telling people to eat sugar for energy so they could, again, addressing women and their obsession with weight loss. Oh, you know, you'll eat less, have a soda pop or eat some sugar so you can wait until a meal so you won't eat.
So they were saying that sugar curbs your appetite.
Yes.
So this is the interesting thing. In the 50s and 60s and 70s and even the 80s, we've kind of been told not to have the fat, to have more of the sugar, because that's healthy. It's going to curb your appetite. You're going to lose weight. You're going to have so much energy. And so even that's why now when people talk about high fat or eating more fat, they can be a bit hesitant, thinking, well, how can I eat so much fat? How is fat so important? Why is fat so important for the thyroid?
It's important for everyone. Well, fat is important. All our brain is made out of fat. Our liver is making fat, but not enough if we're stressed. So all our steroid hormones are made out of fat. Thyroid hormone is actually a protein peptide, so it's not made out of fat. But eating fat, cortisol, adrenal function, and thyroid function are intertwined. You can't separate one from the other. So you need the fat for your cortisol levels to be appropriate, and you also need fat in order as an anti-inflammatory and to give your thyroid energy, the energy for your ATP, for, you know, in order to function properly.
So,
yeah.
You need the butter, you need the tallow, the lard, you need the fat in the meat. So we're going to take a little bit of a break, and then we're going to talk about the thing that you most want to know about, which is the 10 warning signs that your thyroid might be in trouble, so that you will know maybe you might have something wrong with your thyroid and you can get further testing. So we're going to do that. Plus, we're going to talk about foods, what foods you need to eat to help with your thyroid. But we're going to take a break now and we'll see you very shortly. I wanted to let you know the November Carnival Challenge is now open. Now, if you're new to Carnival, or maybe you've been doing this lifestyle for a while, you might have some troubleshooting, you might have some side effects, you might need help staying on track. Because let's face it, when you go out there, there's not going to be a lot of people following the Carnival lifestyle. And that's why we have a team of Carnival coaches that have been doing this lifestyle for over 10 years, and they've lost over 200 pounds. And what I thought was also really important was to get on Carnival doctors. Because let's face it, when you go see your local doctor, they're going to talk about heart disease, cancer, and gout, all coming from eating meat. So that's why having these Carnival doctors coming on every week is so important to help answer your medical questions. So if you'd like to join the challenge, there is a clickable link in the description of this video where you can get 20% off. Or you can just head to academy.5minutebody.com. And if you love this interview with Dr. Bride, please feel free to hit that subscribe button.
Okay, welcome back. We're going to talk now about the 10 warning signs. So I have my list here. I'm very well prepped. So I said to Dr. Bright, should I tell you the warning signs and you just talk about them? She's like, well, there are so many more than 10. So maybe you just tell me what they are and we can just elaborate. So these are the 10 warning signs. I don't know if there's many more which we can talk about, but let's just talk about 10 so people can just understand, okay, I feel this, I need to go have my thyroid tested. The first one, the first warning sign that your thyroid might be in trouble is your body temperature.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And why is that important? Because how does our physiology work? It works by catalyzing enzymes. Without a proper healthy body temperature, enzymes will not be catalyzed and things will not happen in the body. So chronically low body temperature is a very good indication.
So if you feel you're always cold, I'm thinking of one person in particular, apart from myself, they're always cold. So if you always feel that you want to have a blanket around you, it is warm outside, but you always feel that you want to have a jacket, that is a sign that, you know, you've got an irregular body temperature.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What if you're feeling so hot all the time?
That could also be adrenals.
Okay.
Not necessarily thyroid. I'm not going to go to the hyperthyroid thing. I don't know yes, if your thyroid is overproducing, you may have a higher temperature.
It's
also a sympathetic nervous system response to high cortisol levels.
Okay.
That's what a hot flash is. A hot flash is a vasomotor response to a sudden jump in cortisol.
Oh, so it's not just a typical menopause symptom. It's just from
high cortisol. There are no menopausal symptoms. They do not exist.
Did you hear that? For people that are going through menopause? So, okay, we're going to get into the more warning signs, but just sidetrack like for a second.
Yes.
What are these menopause symptoms that, okay, they're not menopause symptoms, but what are all these things that women are feeling when they're going through the menopause?
Adrenal symptoms. Adrenal symptoms and possibly thyroid symptoms. That's what my book is all about. It is about the fact that menopause, you're literally, when you're a teen, you're supposed to look down and say, oh, I got my period. You're not supposed to have pain, cramps, mood swings, swelling, etc. When you go into menopause, you're supposed to look down and say, oh, I don't get my period anymore. That is all that's supposed to happen.
You're not meant to have all the other stuff, night sweats, fatigue.
These are an accumulation of decades of endocrine imbalance. Not the production of your estrogen and progesterone, because estrogen and progesterone, ovarian production is only necessary for making babies.
So we're also going to talk about the fix. If you're going through menopause and you have these terrible side effects, we're going to talk about solutions just in a second after these warning signs. Okay, so number one that your thyroid is in trouble is temperature. Number two is metabolism.
Yes. Yes, your thyroid regulates your metabolism, not just T3, but also T2 regulates metabolism. That's what we talked about before. The thyroid regulates ATP and ensures that what you eat is turned into ATP.
And energy.
Energy.
Okay. Why do some people gain weight when they have a thyroid issue and they say, I'm hypothyroid, I've gained weight?
Because they are not burning food. One of the older ways of diagnosing hypothyroidism was high cholesterol. You're not turning the cholesterol into brain tissue, myelin sheaths, or steroid hormones. It's just sitting there. Or high triglycerides. That is also a hypothyroid symptom.
Okay. If you have high cholesterol, are you saying that somebody could have high thyroid?
Absolutely.
If they have high cholesterol.
But what is high?
Yeah.
My high is much different than the medical high.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay, how do you know because when you said that, I think people are going to be thinking, oh, I might have high total, like total.
Total, yes, but total, okay. I don't want any woman under 220.
Okay.
The US measurement, right?
And what is the Australian measurement for cholesterol?
I don't want any, oh my God. 220. My calculation, and I think it's like
Okay.
I don't want anybody.
You don't want anyone under six. That's good.
Yeah.
Because it's so interesting that when it's over six or 220 for people in the US,
you get a statin.
Yes.
Yes.
My doctor, my total cholesterol was 12 or something mm-hmm. when I started carnivore like 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. And they were talking to me about statins. Mm-hmm. And the number of people that I have on my carnivore group that say, you know, they're so worried about this thing about cholesterol and LDL and that they're new to carnivore and they go see their doctor and they and mm-hmm. the doctor says, oh, this
your
is...
your heart's going to explode.
Yes. And they're so scared about that. And they want somebody to reassure them that what they're doing is the right thing. So elevated, higher levels of cholesterol, total cholesterol.
Can be.
Yeah.
Can be. And high triglycerides can be caused by the inability to turn those things into ATP.
Okay.
Because the fatty acids are just ATP to B.
So is it the triglycerides in the total cholesterol?
Both. I've seen both high or just the cholesterol high.
Right. Okay.
In a hypothyroid state.
That's fascinating. Okay. The next one, number three warning sign, hair.
Hair falling out, absolutely. Hair dry, hair frizzy, hair falling out, yes.
Okay, and what if you have coarse hair?
Also.
Yes.
Also, nails breaking, toenail fungus, very common. Why? Because with a small amount of thyroid hormone, if there are low levels, your body cares about keeping your organs. You're very important, keep you alive. Or doesn't even care about the brain. It just cares about here. So the extremities, the feet and the head, are not going to get nutrition.
Okay. So that's another thing that you have to look at. Bowel function, number four.
Constipation, a hypothyroid symptom. Hashimoto's can be alternating diarrhea and constipation.
What about diarrhea and constipation? Okay, so it's not just from doing carnivore that you're going to get constipation and diarrhea. It could be a thyroid issue. So if you have, and when you say constipation.
I think people should have a bowel movement every day.
Me too. So when somebody is doing carnivore and they have a bowel movement once or twice a week.
Look into that.
Okay, why?
I mean, look, they should look into that.
Yeah.
But because they may have slowed down motility because peristaltic motility is regulated by T3.
Okay. So that's interesting because some other carnivore advocates can say, oh, you know,
it's just okay not to have a bowel movement every. Yeah.
But I'm sure that people out there are just thinking, no, I want to go to the bathroom every day. And yeah, if I go, because it is that uncomfortable feeling when you don't go to the bathroom every day. If people are not going so frequently, it could be that you have a thyroid issue.
If you're resorting to enemas and laxatives, definitely check it out.
Okay, good. Next one is focus. So if you can't focus properly.
Mm-hmm. Cognition, yes. Brain fog, absolutely.
So that means that you're hypothyroid.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, you can't, ataxia, the inability to find words.
Okay.
All of that is related to, I have done videos on all of these issues.
So that's a thing that when people can't focus and they say, oh, I just have a lack of focus. It's just mm-hmm. age or
concentration.
Something. Concentration. I can't concentrate. Mm-hmm. Even the opposite, I have ADHD, which is I can't focus but high energy.
Caused by hypothyroidism.
Yes. So if you have a variation in your focus or you just can't be still and just focus on something mm-hmm. with proper concentration, it could be due to your thyroid, your hormones.
It requires energy to concentrate.
Absolutely.
It requires energy to focus. If you're unable to make energy, you can't focus or concentrate.
Absolutely.
Right.
It requires so much energy to be mentally focused. Mm-hmm. So even people think about physical exertion, mm-hmm. that you're burning calories or burning energy. But when you are mentally in a state that you're working with focus and dedication, it takes an incredible amount of brain power.
It does.
And what does your brain work best off?
Ketones.
And fat. So that's why that's so interesting that when you are, and I noticed this when I was doing carnivore, especially the high-fat carnivore, mm-hmm. is that you just feel so much calmer, more focused, and mm-hmm. that you can just work for longer periods and be so incredibly concentrated on what you're doing, as opposed to, you know, if there's a noise here, then you're looking there or looking there. So
right.
It's that focus and the energy that is so great when you do carnivore. Not to say that everybody has to be carnivore, but if you're not keto at least, try it, keto to the carnivore. The focus and the concentration just goes amazing.
Keto, though, if we're talking about almonds and almond flour and those keto desserts that people make, or broccoli, cauliflower rice, that kills the thyroid. They are goitrogens. They interfere with the absorption of iodine, which the thyroid desperately needs.
Absolutely. If you have, yeah. That's so interesting, because when you listen to other health influencers and they say the one thing that you need for collagen production and anti-aging is dark green leafy vegetables, and they say nuts and seeds, and I just like, well, no, you don't actually.
No, you don't.
I was having, a bag of spinach a day in green smoothies. Mm. I was making almond flour cookies. Let me tell you something. Almond flour cookies, I'd have the whole tray. No joke. Peanut butter cookies, I would eat the whole tray, because I don't have a stop button with those kind of things. Mm-hmm. But that's so interesting that you don't need all these green leafy vegetables and, you know, the peanuts.
No, they actually are detrimental. It's not that you don't need them. They are actually harmful.
Absolutely.
Beyond so, not needing, they are harmful.
So I actually say that because for a lot of people to go carnivore, it is really hard. So giving them a bit of a bridge between wherever they were before, mm-hmm. to just doing a bit of, you know, avoiding the spinach and the oxalates and the almonds and all the anti-nutrients that are really not good for you, but giving a bit of flexibility, because some people struggle with being carnivore 100%.
Okay, so almonds and spinach are full of anti-nutrients. Fruit is not full of anti-nutrients, because plants actually want you to eat fruit and go over there and poop the seeds so the trees grow over there too. However, if you are a person, can be addicted to the inflammatory response that is caused by those foods, just like you can be addicted to a substance. It's a stimulant. Inflammation can be a stimulant. Mm-hmm. And they may feel logy and tired when they give those up. Why? Because they have their adrenals and their thyroid are reacting to these stimulants, not poking them and acting like nicotine and cocaine and I don't know what.
So maybe try carnivore, because Dr. Brighton loves carnivore. I mean, look, if you can't do carnivore, it's good. I mean, if you can't do it, it's okay. Do the best that you can, because I don't want people to be off-put, because it's not about the perfection. It's about getting to as much as you can, taking out the anti-nutrients, mm-hmm. and doing the best that you can, because everyone's on a different journey. So I'm always mindful to talk about that.
Sure,
being strict is not always, sometimes it can be more off-putting.
Or it may be a temporary, you must be so strict, right? Because we want to heal, and eventually you can eat more foods and different foods when you have healed.
Absolutely. And we're going to talk about some foods in a second. So the next one is a goiter, which we spoke about earlier.
Yes.
As a warning sign.
Yes. So that is the thyroid is inflamed, becomes larger in the absence of iodine, not enough iodine.
And what is a goiter?
It's just the thyroid. There are two lobes. It's a butterfly shape. And they expand. They get bigger. They swell in order to trap more iodine from the bloodstream.
Okay. So if you have an enlarged something here that looks like a bulge.
Yes.
That is a goiter, and that could be a sign that you have a thyroid issue.
Yep. An iodine deficiency.
Iodine deficiency. Okay, the next one is skin.
Skin. Dry skin, flaky skin, cracked skin. These are hypothyroid symptoms, yes.
Okay. Acne?
Yes, because thyroid hormone regulates your androgen. Thyroid actually regulates the synthesis of steroid hormones. So it will, acne is associated with more androgen hormones, right? So if a person may have acne because the hormone regulation is not happening properly.
Okay, eczema?
Eczema is also yes and no, but as I said, eczema and psoriasis are more related to adrenal function, but adrenals and thyroid work together. Mm-hmm. So you can have eczema if you're hypothyroid because your adrenals aren't working properly.
Okay. Next one is eyes.
Vision. I haven't done that video yet. Yes. Hearing and vision and teeth are three things I haven't spoken about. Hearing loss is associated with hypothyroidism. Macular degeneration is associated with hypothyroidism. Cataracts are associated with hypothyroidism.
Okay. So if you have any of those, it can be that you have a thyroid issue. Can you help with those conditions if you fix your thyroid?
Yes. Yes.
So that's how powerful
you can have. Also have optic nerve inflammation. What is associated, the physical sign of when the eyes start to protrude is associated with hyperthyroidism, but it can also happen with hypothyroidism, because all of the tissue, low thyroid causes the liquids in the tissues to be sticky and goopy because there are glycosaminoglycans. So you know the hyaluronic acid that women are injecting in their cheeks to be... Okay, so that stuff is in all your tissues, synovial tissue, your joint tissue, behind the eyes, in the ears, and that will cause inflammation because fluids aren't moving properly through the tissue.
So if somebody has bulging eyes, so you see those...
Usually associated with hyper.
Yes.
But that is, yes.
Okay. All right. Okay, energy.
Lack thereof, absolutely.
So if you have low energy, it can be an issue, a thyroid issue. So if you feel fatigued, what if somebody is doing carnival? Because I know people are going to be thinking, well, I just started carnival. I'm feeling crap.
You took out the stimulants. When you go carnivore, you're taking out the stimulants. So any kind of carbohydrate is a stimulant. If your body is a bit depending on that, or a marathon, or an ice bath, or a sauna to be stimulated, then when you remove those things, yes, you will feel more lethargic. And yes, then you maybe should check into your thyroid and adrenal function.
Okay. Changes in heart rate.
Yes, so... did a video on that. The heart is dependent upon thyroid hormone signaling. The thyroid actually tells the uses neurotransmitters via the adrenals, norepinephrine or noradrenaline, to tell the heart at which rate to beat. So it can, the heart, you can have a pounding heart and feel it at night when you lie down. It's very common. That is because the heart is trying to beat. It's trying desperately to circulate blood, but the signaling is disrupted, so it's not beating at the right rate.
Okay. Next, so that was 10. So hang on. 10. 10. Were there any other signs or symptoms that you can think of that we haven't covered?
The list is endless, I'm afraid.
So many things that you might be experiencing. It's just probably good to test your thyroid. I mean, just to see... I'm not going to say in the normal ranges because you just said there is no normal ranges.
There is a normal range. There's a good range, but the problem is that the ranges are too wide. So many people will not be
diagnosed properly. So they because they're too wide, they're thinking that you're okay, but they need to be narrower because
And there was a period of time when the American Thyroid Association tried desperately to get their ranges narrowed, but it did not happen.
Okay.
The endocrinologist went to the American Thyroid Association and begged and pleaded to have the ranges made narrowed, but no, did not happen.
And why do they want to keep it wide?
If things are not diagnosed, how will we sell medications?
So that's the thing. It could be a reason why... they want to keep it like that so that we can just sell drugs and medications. And
if ADHD, depression, bipolar syndrome, hypertension,
obesity,
atrial fib, obesity, if all these things are, or a doctor in the 1950s had 20 pages of symptoms and he would look, before they had TSH, and he would say, yes, you may be hypothyroid, let's look into it. But they wouldn't be selling amphetamines, antidepressants, beta blockers, ACE inhibitors, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep. So we're talking about a $1 billion industry.
Yes, unfortunately.
That is, I mean, profiting. Can't say the word.
Profiteering.
Profiteering. Good one. Which is profiteering off these kind of, you know, numbers, even when it comes to cholesterol and LDL triglycerides. Again, mm-hmm. those numbers aren't correct in terms of when you, even if you need a statin, we don't need a statin when your LDL is above 3 or whatever the US number is, or 3.5 or something. Above, I think it's 3.5, I think it's 5.
The US is now... the bottom, the high is now 200. They are trying to get it to 180. However, 10 years ago, and I had a patient who was an older woman and who was a scientist, who I was suggesting the diet to her, and I was trying to acquaint her with the idea of cholesterol and not to be, you know, concerned about it. And she said, oh, I remember when the high was 300. I know, it's silly. So it was 300, 260, and now it's 200, and they're trying to get it to 180.
So is there a higher level of total cholesterol that you would say that's too high, or that you've seen that it's too high?
Yes. I would say upper threes, 400, 500, it's a thyroid issue.
Okay.
Because then it's always coming down.
Okay. So you see the thyroid affects everything. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to talk about some solutions because people are probably thinking, well, I have all of those warning signs or some of them and I feel like terrible. What can I do? So the first thing is correct iodine deficiency.
Correct. Yes, absolutely. The thyroid that's the raw material for making thyroid hormone.
So when I first visited Dr. Bright 4 weeks ago, she just ran to her kitchen and said, have this. And
over there, yeah.
So Dr. Bright has these big bottles of iodine that she makes in this room.
Lugol's,
yeah. So the first time that I came here, you're like, okay, have this, and some beef jerky. Because iodine is so important. Why is iodine so important?
It's not just important for the thyroid. The thyroid needs a minimum of 5, when you are sufficient, a minimum of 5 milligrams daily. The breasts need 5 milligrams daily. The ovarian tissue needs it. The uterine tissue needs it. The mucous tissue needs it. The male's prostate needs it. And we actually need a 15% increase every time you have, not me, you, when we have a cycle.
Oh, wow, really?
So that's what I'm writing about in my book on adolescence, how crucial it is for healthy puberty.
Okay. And then another thing, so does everybody have to take iodine, do you think?
Let me put it this way. It used to be an issue in Gorderbelt. Switzerland was a country that had a huge rate of learning disabilities. The soil, if the soil is deficient in iodine, and that's what a Gorderbelt is, a Gorder region, Switzerland, in Liguria in Italy, in Sardinia, Michigan in the U.S., the Tennessee Mountains where my family came from, those areas are because of the glaciers melting and all the iodine washing down into the rivers, the soil where those people are growing food is deficient in iodine. That used to be the only place we saw deficiency, unless, of course, a person experienced trauma and stress. That would just burn through a lot of iodine. Unfortunately, today, not only do we have fluoride in the water, which many, many scientists and dentists said when they first put it in the water in the U.S. and in products in the U.S. and in teeth washes and things like that, that this would be horrific for health. They put it in anyway. Fluoride is a halide. It will interfere with the absorption of iodine because iodine is a halide. Bromide is a halide, which used to be supplemented with iodine in the U.S., and they changed it to bromide. So these are things that will, and chloride, which is in pools and in,
anything I-I-D-E.
Yes, is a halide.
Yes.
And they will interfere with the absorption of iodine. So you can have possibly an adequate source from your food, but you cannot absorb it because you're surrounded by halides or there are halides in your system. And today we have forever chemicals, PFAs, xenoestrogens interfere with the absorption of iodine, millet, oat, yams, all these grains interfere, quercetin, which everybody takes, brassica, so cauliflower, broccoli.
So that's why
interfere with the absorption of iodine. So cassava.
In your Instagram post, you said in Scotland they were talking about breast cancer and menopause.
Yes, yes, yes.
And then it's not to do with that. It's because of inflammation. And you were saying about HRTs and even the medications, they're made out of these cassava
and yam. Yes, they are. Yes, they are.
So what that is doing is that...
There isn't any, I don't think by the time the person is taking the bioidentical progesterone that there isn't any goitrogenic activity in it. It's the people are eating these things and putting that on their skin and drinking oat milk and oh my God. All these things are making it impossible for you to absorb iodine.
So anything like these plant milks, so almond milk, oat milk, soy milk.
Soy is the worst. Soy is a terrible goitrogen. Interferes with the absorption of iodine.
And that's why carnivore, which is the next solution, is so important because even Dr. Ken Berry said it's not necessarily the meat and the fat and all that. It's because you're taking away all the anti-nutrients.
Also, yes, absolutely.
So it's the both things that are so important to help with the thyroid, to help with your hormones. But I wanted to ask you before going into the high-fat carnivore as a solution. So we spoke about the iodine. So it's a Lugol's. How much should we be taking?
It depends. There's a minimum and you want to get to a sufficiency and then you top it up. I don't know how how many toxins does a person have in their system? It depends. A minimum used to be 2 drops a day. 2 drops of 5%/15%. In the UK, it was originally called a 15% because people are so scared of iodine. The US calls it now 5%, but it's actually a 15% solution, meaning that it's potassium iodide and elemental iodine together, which makes it 15%. So they just said, oh, the count of the elemental iodine, even though there's potassium iodide in it as well. So it's a 5%/15% solution. Used to be the minimum that you would need to top up a sufficient system would be 2 drops.
2 drops of the 5%, okay, as a minimum. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes.
So, because I always get asked that question, how sure. much Lugol should I be taking? Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts about natural desiccated thyroid?
That is what the only thing I would recommend.
To fix a thyroid issue.
If a person has hypothyroidism.
And what is the difference between natural desiccated thyroid and like a normal thyroid medication?
There's only levothyroxine, mm-hmm. which is a synthetic T4, which only gives you T4. Remember, the thyroid makes 5 hormones. Mm-hmm. So people with thyroidectomies who don't have a thyroid are screwed because they're getting this T4, which the body will not easily, it definitely cannot convert into calcitonin, which regulates vitamin D synthesis and bone resorption, calcium levels. Very hard for the body to convert a T4 to T3 to T2 to T1. And natural desiccated thyroid provides all 5.
Okay, so if somebody has a thyroid issue, so along with the iodine, they mm-hmm. they might have to take
it. It depends. Natural... Everybody okay. needs iodine. I believe in our, sorry, I keep hitting the mic. That's in okay. our polluted world today, I would say, I mean, the reason I have those bottles over there is because I have 3 kids and I'm shipping iodine to them all the time. So, yeah.
Okay. So if you have a thyroid issue, the iodine is just take it every day just for your
iodine
optimal,
is not just for a thyroid issue.
Yeah. But I need to make that clear distinction so that people can understand, okay, when should I take certain things and the importance of the iodine. Because even I was saying with Dr. Bright, you gave me the iodine, I started taking it, but then I got scared because I thought, okay, maybe when I leave Italy, I won't have any more iodine. But she said, everybody needs it. You need to be taking it. I said, okay, I will. So just to emphasize, iodine is so important because it's so depleted in our environment. There's correct. So many pollutants outside. Mm-hmm. Even when you're eating carnivore, and that's what we're going to talk about now, mm-hmm. even when you're eating carnivore, the nutrient density in the foods that we're eating is not that high, especially when you're just having beef and lamb and bacon, all these different things.
Not an iodine anyway.
Exactly. And then if you have an issue with your thyroid, you can definitely take the natural desiccated thyroid.
If you get it.
Really? So it's not available?
They don't like to prescribe it.
Why?
Because it costs more money than the synthetic.
Okay.
I think the medical police is going to be banging on my door tomorrow.
Well, that's the thing. That's why on the videos when I talk about these different things, because sometimes, you know, a lot of the time it's okay, why do they have wider ranges for thyroid? Because maybe they want to sell more drugs. Why do they have this or what? And then, you know, it's just this conversation to broaden up, you know, what's actually happening in reality.
Well, we're being very specific. We're being very yes. specific and precise. So
yes. So anyway, moving on. Let's talk about high-fat carnivore. You are a lover of high-fat carnivore.
I am.
What is high-fat carnivore?
It is basically getting most of your energy from fat and all the nutrition that comes from protein. So we absolutely need protein because we need the amino acids. All the vitamins and minerals, water-soluble vitamins and minerals, are in protein. The fat-soluble vitamins are in fat. Vitamin D, vitamin K, vitamin E, vitamin A. Everybody's taking vitamin D. Eat fat. Eat fat. So that's why, and there are no anti-nutrients. And I just think it ensures you your optimum health. I mean, it doesn't have to be 100% all the time, but I think the backbone of the diet should be ruminant and ruminant fat.
Okay. My next question was going to be, this is probably a question that you get a lot, which is, well, how much protein and how much fat? But I think a better way to talk about it mm-hmm. is to talk about foods.
Sure.
Because, and I know with many of our conversations, it varies. Mm-hmm. Different people are going to be different in terms of how much protein and how much fat, depending on where you're coming from. So you really have to trial it for
yourself. Would you say that's correct?
I would. If someone's very ill and I need to, and if they have inflammation, I would consider higher fat temporarily because, and women who are trying to reproduce, people who are looking for pregnancies, all of or balance their hormones, you need fat to do that. So, and if somebody is doing a lot of weightlifting, you might need more protein. Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't mean that you have to eat one stick of butter a day and a pound of meat.
That depend on your height, right?
It depends on your height.
Depends on your build.
Depends on your build, depends on your metabolic flexibility and where you're coming from. But even if you don't have a thyroid issue, having more fat is so nourishing and so important for our hormones anyway, just to maintain the hormones. But I'd love to talk about foods, and I know that you'd like to hear about foods. And Dr. Bright, you love your ribeye.
I do.
And that is the first one that we're going to talk about. Now, what I have here is some foods that we're going to think about. Are they good for balancing hormones? How good are they? Mm-hmm. So, for example, the first one is a ribeye.
Right.
How good is that for balancing
hormones? It has fat. Mm-hmm. It has protein. It has no anti-nutrients. That's what I mostly eat. But I also eat a lot of skirt steak. In the U.S., it's called skirt steak. It's diaphragm. And hanger steak, which also has a lot of fat and a lot of iron because it's very bloody. So it doesn't just have to be ribeye. Chuck is good, too. I mean, ribeye is one of the most expensive cuts. So we have to also consider the fact. I use a lot of beef ribs for my snacks, for my tallow bars and my meat cookies. So I use beef ribs for that.
Okay. And that's a very important thing. Ribeye is very expensive. So I know that mm-hmm. can be expensive. And unless you get it on sale. I know that some people that even, you know, having half of the ribeye or something, mm-hmm. you don't have to have ribeye. You can just have the fattiest cut of beef.
You can have oxtail. You can yes. have, you know,
anything.
Beef ribs.
Yes, beef ribs, short ribs.
Lankin ribs.
Yep, they're all good. If you're having something like this, would you recommend adding more fat to it? Or if you have something like beef ribs or short ribs that has enough fat in it?
Yeah, they have a lot of fat. No, I don't, it depends on what you're trying to do. I mean, I usually tell people, I mean, I have my butter and my decaf in the morning and then around 10. And then I don't have, on my ribeye at lunch, I don't add butter. It depends on what I'm doing.
Okay.
If I've gone 10K on my paddleboard, I might add some butter.
So it depends. So if you have exercised more, if you are exhausted, haven't slept mm-hmm. properly, more mm-hmm. stressed, you could have a ribeye, a chuck steak, and add a bit of butter. So this is just giving people some variations in terms of, okay, I know how my meal should look, as mm-hmm. opposed to here are some numbers, because even I don't follow numbers.
No.
Numbers are just something that I don't ever follow.
Love lamb.
Do you love lamb?
I love seeing my daughter in Scotland.
Yeah.
Not just because of my grandson, but because they have the best lamb there.
Okay, so
lamb
is good.
Great fat.
Very good fat, high in fat. Mm-hmm. What are some ways that people can enjoy lamb?
Roasts, shoulder roasts are really, really fatty. In the U.S., we could get shoulder steaks. I don't eat Italian lamb. Sorry, Italy. Chops,
love Italy.
Roasts, leg. Leg is not as fatty. The chops and the roasts are, shoulder roasts are the most fatty.
Okay, and ground lamb?
Sure.
Yeah,
sure.
So you can make it so simple, budget friendly.
Merguez sausage we used to make.
Yeah, so lamb is great. If you want to add some butter to it, go ahead. If you're, again, tired or stressed or, you know, do a 10K on your paddleboard like Dr. Bright. Now, the next one, what do you think about this?
I love bacon, but I can't get good bacon here. And when we lived in Geneva, they would slice it for us. Here, they refuse to slice it because they say the cartilage hurts the slicer. So they'll only offer us this horrible boiled stuff, mm-hmm. not cured. So we are only eating bacon when we go visit our grandson.
Scotland.
Yes, in Scotland and her partner.
So bacon is good. So it's like Dr. Ken Berry's beef, butter, bacon and eggs. It's very, very good. It's full of nutrients, mm-hmm. Lots of fat. So especially, and especially when you're new to carnivore, bacon can be quite good.
Yeah, it's sweet, isn't it?
Well, it's nice and salty.
Pork tastes sweeter to me than beef.
100%. Me too. And it's kind of like when somebody wants a snack or something nice, it's crunchy.
So people love crunchy. People miss creamy and crunchy.
Yes.
Pork rinds is another thing that people, I don't know if it's in this list, but like pork rinds is another thing that people can lean towards if they want to do carnivore. It's high in fat, it's crunchy, can tide you over, and it's a good snack if you want to have snacks. So this one I know that you have thoughts on, sardines.
Well, sardines are great. Are you eating them fresh is the question. I used to live in a part of Italy where sardines was really much more affordable than they are here. Are you eating them from a can? What is lining that can? Is the olive oil in that can? If they say olive oil, it's not olive oil. It's not 100% olive oil, even though they say so, because there are loopholes for it to be 80% safflower oil and only 20% olive oil.
So you have to be careful where you source the sardines. And most people don't love sardines, but you should try.
I like sardines.
Most people
they're fattier.
They're fattier.
They're fattier than whitefish,
but
cod, salt.
I would, I guess, challenge people to try sardines because when you eat them, your brain just turns on.
Yeah, well,
I find that.
I like, I used to make bluefish, which is an American bluefish, right? A pesce azzurro. So it's bluefish are always fattier. So sardines, bluefish, anchovies.
Anchovies are good. Nice
and
salty.
They're fattier.
Yes.
And they're really good wrapping bacon around bluefish is very good.
Okay, good. Next one. This is good. Eggs.
Yes, eggs. I don't eat eggs. I eat an egg yolk and my beet decaf in the morning. My husband loves eggs, but I don't eat eggs regularly.
Why?
It just doesn't turn me on.
You like beef better?
I like beef better.
And lamb.
I like my meat cookies and my jerky and my talabars better.
I would love to try a meat cookie, by the way.
I'll give you one after.
It sounds delicious. Let me tell you something. The beef jerky, I have never tried. I thought, what is this? This is delicious. Dr. Bright's a really good cook, so I'm excited to try the beef cookie. This one.
Cheese. I used to love cheese. I used to eat cheese. Mm-hmm. I think that cheese can be problematic. Scientifically speaking, A2 milk is better. Sheep and goat are better, or Jersey and Guernsey cows, which the UK have. Aged cheese is better because the bacterial process has eaten, the bacteria have eaten the lactose and the milk proteins, which is what people would be reacting to. Cheese is not good if somebody has a thyroid issue because the thyroid is sensitive to the milk proteins because the immune system is overreacting. Mm-hmm. Dairy, the white stuff, the mozzarella, the ricotta, the cream cheese, those are not as good as the aged cheese because they have a lot more lactose and a lot more milk proteins. However, there are papers done, Paolo Bressan did a paper on schizophrenia and how much people improved when they removed cheese and gluten. Dairy and gluten from the diet. So there's sort of a bang there. It can be addictive. Mm-hmm. It can also affect mood because of the caseinomorphins. We're the only animal that eats another animal's milk. So
some people, they love their cheese, but a great way around it is, you know, when you do carnivore and you're just trying that elimination for 30 or 60 days, even doing the carnivore and having a break from the dairy and just see if you notice any difference.
Yeah.
See if you notice any difference, anything that is, you're like, you know what, I have more energy, I have more clarity, I sleep better, I don't snore or any of these things by taking out the dairy. And then, you know, have it in sometimes if you want it. Like aged cheese is just really good. So sometimes if I want to have cheddar, blue cheese, what else? Anything that's very sharp flavor.
Yeah, all those, Parmesan, pecorino, those are all, the age is always going to bring out the
strongness,
the saltiness, and
and that's really good to add on your beef or lamb. I'm feeling hungry now, but that is really good.
So you like cheese a lot?
I love aged cheese. I love anything strong. I absolutely love
yes.
The pecorino, the blue cheese.
Puglia has a great pecorino.
I love
it's actually from Basilicata, but yeah,
I love good. Blue cheese, and I love just having small quantities. I don't like to have a lot of cheese.
No, in the small quantity, that's absolutely fine.
Yeah, and I love
it. You're not going to throw out the baby with the bathwater. You're not going to ruin the improvements you've had by having a little piece. It's if you have it every day a lot.
Absolutely.
Then it becomes an issue.
But it's interesting if I have some cream cheese or anything that's just like proper dairy.
I can see the effects. Mm. I can, my energy, my sleep, my skin, everything just goes down from when I have those things. But when I have a, the great thing about having the aged cheese is that you just need a bit. You can't even have a lot because it's so strong. So even then it's self-limiting. Mm-hmm. And that's what I like. And that's why I love the lamb and the beef, because again, it's self-limiting. You yes. can't, it's very hard to overeat ruminant fatty meat.
Yes.
Some people I say agree. That they can. And they can probably can, but if you compare that to how much you could overeat on cheese or carbohydrates, mm-hmm. you're going to be eating less of the ruminant meats. And that's why, okay, this is getting off the thyroid thing, but all hormones. In the long term, that's why people lose weight on carnivore, because you are so satiated that your body doesn't need all the extra energy.
Right.
And that's how you lose weight. It's not from counting calories. It's not from certain macros. Mm-hmm. What do you think of this one?
I love butter. I use it in my decaf twice a day.
What type of butter are you using? Salted, unsalted?
Unsalted. We buy a Beppino Celle, which is nice because you can see the color of it changes when the cows go graze other places. I'm in Italy, so I don't have the choices that other people might have, but this is a really nice choice. It's nice. Okay. Yeah.
Really like Actually, it. I was thinking of the butter that you choose, because I went to buy butter for my fatty latte. I thought, what does Dr. Bright have? I'm just curious.
Like, I'll show you that. I'll show you. Okay. Beppino Celle.
Meat cookie and butter coming up after this interview. I'm so excited.
You can make a ice cream sandwich with my meat cookies, because I put butter in between.
Oh, two wow. cookies.
My kids think I'm crazy.
But. No, it's not. I've tried that. It's a double beef burger. So if you, I mean, that's with the meat cookies.
Right,
but
right.
if you have two burger patties, mm-hmm. put a slice of butter. It tastes like cheese. Mm-hmm. It is so good. It's amazing. Okay, next one is, I think we just have two more.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is fruit. This is an interesting one, because you say that fruit doesn't have any anti-nutrients.
Doesn't have anti-nutrients, but it does have, so a mango and a papaya or a durian or a, you know, will have a horrific amount of sugar as opposed to berries. So if somebody has mood issues, a stimulant or adrenal issues, the stimulus gotten from a very sugary fruit would not be a good idea. But berries don't have, strawberries are sort of a strange breed, but things like raspberries and blackberries don't have the, or a sour apple doesn't have the stimulant punch, say, that very sweet, like pineapple and mango and papaya would have.
So if somebody has a thyroid issue or a hormonal issue, do you think some berries is okay?
I think it is okay.
So that's the thing. Even if you're doing carnivore and if you're having beef, lamb, you know, eggs and butter, if you just have a small amount of berries.
A small amount, yeah.
It's fine with some cream. Maybe not. I love berries and cream.
Oh, yeah. I like it
so
too.
Good. You don't need a chocolate cake. If you just have like carnivore foods or animal-based foods with a bit of fruit is just delicious. Okay, last one is...
Yeah, I like pork rinds.
Do you like pork rinds?
Yeah, I used to make them. Yeah, but it's very labor-intensive, so I stopped.
Okay, and that's really good as a bridging thing. If somebody...
You have to buy the ones that are fried in their own fat, though.
And don't buy the ones that have dextrose and sugars and all the different things. Right. So that's another high-fat thing that you can... High-fat snack or something to add to
a meal. Well, it's just protein. There's not really much fat. You can put it with butter, and then it's...
Delicious.
High-fat.
Okay. Now, that is the, I think it was 9 or 10 foods out of the way. So especially if you have a thyroid issue, hormonal issues, you can lean on these foods as much as you need to. The only thing is with the fruit, just make sure it's, you know, if you want to have fruit like blueberries, strawberries, blackberries, raspberries, we're talking about a small amount.
Yeah. Handful.
A handful. It's not like a lot. And that's the thing when people... say you have to be strict carnivore, they're talking about zero carb for the rest of your life. Do you think you have to be zero carb for the rest of your life?
Absolutely not.
Why?
Because you will be so healthy that you can eat some, I usually say crap, you can eat some suboptimum foods occasionally because you will be so healthy that your system can handle it.
Absolutely. Let's talk about two more things which are very important along with the foods about how to do high-fat carnivore. Mm-hmm. Some people are making some mistakes when it comes to high-fat carnivore. Now, when I spoke to you, you were talking about a few things, and they're not big things, but they're things that when you start carnivore, if you do these things, you're not going to get the healing benefit, especially when you want to fix your thyroid and your hormones. The first one is going too high protein.
Too much means you're not getting enough fat. because you're not eating enough fat, probably.
Okay.
Possibly you'll be tired.
Yes.
So when people go carnivore, they say, oh, I'm so tired. And I say, oh, are you eating only steaks? Maybe you need to add some fat.
And so the recommendation that you say is, you also don't recommend fasting, which is the next mistake, but 3 meals a day, protein about 25 to 30 grams of protein.
Yeah, it's pretty
good. Sure. So that's the thing. When you're talking about high-fat carnivore, it's not low protein.
No, absolutely not.
It's good amount of protein, because if we're talking about 30 grams times 3 is about 90 grams of protein.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty good, 80, mm-hmm. 90 mm-hmm. grams of protein.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then you say the fat per meal, you know, between 30 and 50 grams of fat per meal.
You don't have to have it all. You don't have to, I mean, you can spread it out the way you want. I have 50 grams of fat in the morning because I'm putting 2 25-gram things of butter in my decaf.
Okay. So you can just spread it out during the day. You're not going to get fat from eating so much fat. So that's another thing that people are thinking. So the next one is, don't fast or do OMADs. Why?
I think we evolved to eat some food and be able to fast when we're in a stress state, when we had famine. So it's not something, it's just like an ice bath or a sauna. It's something that we have to be able to endure, but I don't think it's something that is good for us when we're trying to heal something. One meal a day would mean you're shoving all your nutrients into one time a day. It's a little bit harder on the digestive system. You're trying to kick in autophagy, which is happening anyway, and apoptosis happening anyway on a high-fat carnivore diet.
How does that happen? Autophagy happens anyway on a
because
high-fat
carnivore diet? Because you are not, it happens in the absence of glucose, in the absence of carbohydrates.
So that's the thing. You don't have to fast harder or fast longer. You eat when you're hungry, and just doing the carnivore and the high fat, it actually induces all these benefits. So when you hear these things like 48-hour fast, 36-hour fast, OMADs, don't feel that you have to do it to get better results. Just taking out all the anti-nutrients and mm-hmm. eating the most nutrient-dense foods mm-hmm. is what you need to do.
Definitely.
I think some people think, let me try to do something more to try to get better results. But the fasting is very stressful, especially if you're a woman, especially if you're going through the menopause. Even for me, I find it extremely stressful. There's no way I can fast.
I did it at 15 and it was horrible to me, for me.
So the next one is, switch to decaf coffee.
Yes, because caffeine is a stimulant. 5 grams of dark chocolate has 2.2 milligrams of caffeine. A decaf coffee has 0.0000001 milligrams of caffeine.
How much does a proper coffee have, espresso, of caffeine?
90 to 100.
Okay.
So Turkish coffee has 250.
Okay, Turkish coffee is so little. Really?
Yes, well, I know Turkish coffee, but my ex-husband was Greek, so
I've had Turkish coffee. I was thinking, why is this so strong? That much, like the Turkish coffee is very little, 200. Wow, that's very, very strong.
Yes, it is.
And people have like multiple. That's a lot of caffeine.
A lot of stimulants.
How much caffeine do you think somebody can have in a day and still
manage? I would say, I mean, I've gotten my husband to go to decaf.
Okay.
I mean, it depends on your system. If you are very sensitive to stimulants, I don't think any.
Mm-hmm. No dark chocolate. Well, if you're carnivore, you're not having dark chocolate anyway.
Or infrequently, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Like if you're in Scotland and you're having a scone, then that's very infrequent and you're enjoying it. Even when I met Dr. Bright, the first thing that she had was a coffee. And it was so good, the coffee. And I said, can I have some whipped cream? But I didn't want the sugar in the whipped cream. Mm-hmm. But she had a coffee. And then there was just all this cream inside, whipped cream. I said, that is delicious. And then you see, people can just have, you know, something off the normal thing mm-hmm. and enjoy it. It's not like a life sentence that you just must eat meat. Okay, the next one is don't do certain trends to get better results.
I don't know which trend. There's always a trend. There's always a new trend. So I don't know. We have a basic way of living. We evolved to eat a certain way. What is trending may not be how we evolved to eat.
So whether it be fasting, whether it be certain eating, just let me just eat certain foods. The fact that somebody is doing carnivore is the most ancestrally appropriate diet.
Yes, absolutely.
The most nutrient-dense diet. So doing something on top of that, or thinking that doing anything apart from that, to get better results could be a mistake.
Yes.
Okay. The next one is give it time and be patient.
Mm. Yeah, so who has that? Nobody has patience, right?
Nobody has patience.
Right. Yes. It takes, people have forgotten how to convalesce, especially in American society. I live in Italy, so, but convalescing is what we do when we heal. We need to take a break. I remember my mother used to keep me home. I would have a fever if I had a fever. I wouldn't go to, when the fever was gone, she didn't immediately send me to school. I would stay home another day to convalesce. So people need to allow their system to convalesce. They need to heal. Healing means resting. And who allows themselves to rest anymore?
Well, being in Italy, they allow themselves to rest.
They close for 3 hours in the afternoon.
Which is so nice. Yes. It's actually a very nice change. And from traveling, you experience different cultures. And it's very, very beautiful. But the idea of rest, the mm-hmm. idea of sitting and enjoying your meal, the idea of low stress is very important. And this was the next thing, putting yourself under too much stress, even with carnival, eating like a lot of meat or doing a lot of exercise is a mistake.
Yes, well, I'm famous for doing a lot of exercise. That was my past. I was telling people recently that I, in my 20s, I was running. I had my two children. I was a single mother for a time, and I was running 9 to 10 miles a day, 6 days a week. And I was realizing that I was so much nicer to my kids the days I ran than the day I didn't run because I was addicted to adrenaline. So I was too young to have damaged myself, my adrenal function, as it were, to get hot flashes later, whatever associated with that. But I was realizing that I was much calmer when I was high on adrenaline than the day I didn't run. So you can be addicted to the adrenaline, the cortisol that is produced by overexercising, which will not do you any favors in your 40s and 50s.
Mm-hmm. So you have to keep things balanced. The last one is tracking macros, glucose, and ketones. Mm-hmm. You like to say, go by how you feel.
Yes, depending upon the situation. If somebody has blood sugar issues, somebody has a neurological disorder, I would track ketones because we know that the brain does better on ketones. They don't have to be very high, but they have to be in ketosis. So if somebody is weighing, oh, I want to eat an apple, I want to eat a half an apple, and they have a neurological issue, I would say make sure that you, if you eat that apple or have an apple, that you are still in ketosis. You have some ketones to ensure that you're not losing the benefits of trying to heal your neurological disorder.
Absolutely. Okay, the last thing that I'd love to talk about, so that was the mistakes. Mm-hmm. They're not real mistakes. It's just, you know, don't go too hard. Don't go, you know, too much caffeine, too much stress. Eat the fat, eat the meat, allow your body to heal and be patient with the whole process. Take the iodine. Iodine is so important. The last thing that I want to talk about is the importance of fat for adolescents. Mm-hmm. So adolescents, I looked it up, 10 to 19.
Okay, so adolescents, we have to talk about puberty. So adolescents, actually our brain doesn't stop forming until we're 28.
Really?
Right. What we really mean when we talk about adolescence is puberty. We're talking about the formation of sexual characteristics and the arrival of the menses. In boys, there's no, obviously they don't have periods, but they're, you know, they have sexual characteristics that are formed. How does this happen? This happens with fat and thyroid hormone, because iodine and thyroid hormone actually trigger the beginning of puberty, mm-hmm. which then is a knock-on effect. It's a domino effect of all these different hormones being synthesized and regulated, and that will not happen properly in a healthy way with no fat. I certainly wasn't eating at 15.
I wasn't either.
Or iodine.
So that's why it's so important, and maybe it's not controversial because I think people are just starting to come around the idea, even for us in our generations, mm-hmm. that we need to eat more fat. And then to say for your adolescents or people going through puberty that they need more fat or eat more fat. So the topic is very interesting and very important. Even people in general need to eat more fat.
Yes, PCOS, endometriosis, it's happening to younger and younger women. Girls, females, precocious adolescents, there are 8-year-olds and 7-year-olds getting their period, which is not human, in the sense that we did not evolve that way. The median age for menstruation used to be 18 when the person is actually ready to procreate. Mm-hmm. Imagine. So and there's now, a whole, yes, it's way younger. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole confluence of events that the knock-on effect that happens when a girl has her period very early.
When is your book coming out? I know you're working on it now.
I hope around Christmas.
Okay,
I'm perfect. Working on it, yes.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Bright. We covered so much today. And I'm here for another few weeks. I'm sure I'm going to get another bottle of iodine from Dr. Bright. So make sure that you guys take iodine. And I'm going to try meat cooking now.
I have to say one thing.
Yes?
One thing. Because people will ask me about this. People who have an inflamed thyroid may overreact to iodine. So if you overreact to iodine, you are either toxic with halides or your thyroid's inflamed.
Okay. Or they can get a consultation with you and find out.
Yeah.
Dr. Bright is writing a book so that she doesn't, to help more people to get answers. But if you need more answers, I'm going to leave a link in the show notes for Dr. Bright, her website, and you can find out more about her. But thank you so much again, and I'm sure we're going to see you very soon.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed the interview with Dr. Bright. Now you need to watch this video next, which talks about how to start high-fat carnivore the right way for healing and for weight loss, and why eating one stick of butter is not the right way. I'll see you guys next week.